Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the news of today. And our first story I think we're going to talk a little bit about is all of the advice being given to the non-ANC members of Cabinet. So, for example, there's an article here talking about the seven areas in which the new basic education minister, Siviwe Gorube, has to make differences in order to improve the education system. And there's a lot of, I think, speculation on whether the non-ANC members are going to be able to change policy direction in their various ministries, which include other important ministries such as Home Affairs is another important one. Local government goes to the IFP. Home Affairs goes to the DA. So, Herman, let's start off with this question. What exactly do the various ministers have to do in each portfolio in order to make sure that they can survive and that there isn't just a sort of continuity? Because there's going to be so much, considering the ANC dominates cabinet with such a vast number of cabinet positions, there's going to be this really strong kind of drive towards, at least at the very least, inertia, that we should just keep doing things the way they've been done and not rock the boat too much. What do you think are the major challenges the new ministers are going to face?
So I think there's a general point, actually two, three general points, and then one can look more specifically. Point number one is that these ministers will need to balance cabinet collective responsibility with building distinct communication channels with the public, in the sense that if you look at what's at the heart of the ANC's problems, whether it's corruption, whether it's BEE, whether it's load shedding, what really harms the ANC's cabinet political capital potential is its insularity, its sort of post-Mandela insularity, that when once you're in cabinet, you are isolated from what's really going on in South Africa. You've got the Blue Light Brigade. You've got the ministerial mansion. You don't have load shedding. You've got the Bosasa grocery deals. You know, so one of the key things that all non-ANC cabinet ministers and members must establish at first is to break through that insularity. These parties and these politicians cannot be seen to be subsumed into this attitude of cabinet isolation. I think that's step one.
Yes, if I can add to that, I think that there's also an incentive for bureaucrats very specifically to encourage that kind of attitude and behavior. And that's what you have to look out for. It's not just that you're going to be tempted by the position, by the privileges of power. It's also that you're going to have the bureaucrats encouraging you to do that. They're going to say, don't worry, minister, I'll take care of this, because that'll give them the power to do their own thing.
Yeah, and I think that is, if they can't get that right, then the rest is almost inconsequential. The second point, and these are sort of links in a chain, they all have to be intact for the thing to work. The second point is the civil service question, something that we discussed way back a few weeks ago when it became clear that these negotiations were going on. The civil service question must be resolved, and the upcoming national dialogue will be critical to that. If these non-ANC ministers cannot get to the civil service support and operation and leeway they think they need, then it's going to be a hell of a task. And I think, you know, that's failure point number two. And we can look at Johannesburg, we can look at Tshwane, we can look at Ekurhuleni as examples where the relationship between the political executive, whether it's in a city or a department, it remains similar, and the administrative head, whether it's a director general or whether it's a city manager, if there isn't a synergistic, effective, cooperative, constructive relationship between your administrative head and your executive political head, then, you know, policy could be as brilliant as if, you know, the good Lord can come down and carve it out into the stone itself. It won't get to the implementation stage. So that's really point number two. Then point number three, also an issue for the national dialogue, is the extent to which the national dialogue will determine the details of policy. The ANC and, the DA and the IFP and the non-ANC parties who really want to make a success of this, their best hope is to have the national dialogue determine outcomes of policy, not the details of policy, but that they give them, you know, KPIs, key performance indicators on a quarterly, annual, whatever
poverty basis. Poverty must be reduced by X rather than how you get to reducing poverty by X.
Exactly. That is the best case scenario in terms of a commonality of policy holding the cabinet together. Because the moment you get into subs, you know, that micromanaging before you get to the outcomes, then you get into the inconsolable ideological differences that really would tear the cabinet and this government apart. So that point number three is ensure that the national dialogue sets as a policy framework this idea of outcomes rather than inputs. That I think is the best case scenario they can hope for. And then the fourth thing would be different for every minister in terms of challenging or having the challenges in their portfolio. And to that extent, the political pressure will be immense to make sure that I would say this cabinet has 2 years to show it's worth something. I genuinely think 2 years is the maximum number of time they have to start showing results. So then it becomes pressure on these ministers to make sure that you have something to show that the public will believe, buy into, appreciate, and judge worthwhile 2 years from now. So my advice would be identify three key problems, for example, in education. I think it could be simplified to nutrition, literacy, numeracy. Have a one-year plan, have a three-year plan, have a 10-year plan, and make sure that you can use those stepping stones to manage the political pressure coming out from your parties onto you to make sure you can justify the continued membership of the GNU, but also ensure that you keep the public on side with progress towards very definable critical points. And then in the GNU itself, make sure that it is outcomes based across the board. I think those four points are probably what will make or break these ministers.
I think in terms of the sort of larger cabinet dynamics, it's going to be very important for some of the non-ANC parties to stick together to a fair degree. And I'm thinking specifically about the DA and the IFP here. It's going to be very, very much in the ANC's interests to sort of play the smaller parties off against each other. And we've already seen this to some degree between the ANC and the PA and the DA kind of not really getting on that well. I don't consider Al Jamaha, which only has one deputy minister position, as anything other than essentially an ANC subsidiary. So, that's not, that doesn't really feature into this discussion. But the same goes for Good as well, I would say. But in terms of, I think, especially the DA and IFP relationship, there must be at least some coordinated strategy and working together there. Because if the ANC plays those two parties off against each other, they will be completely incapable of ever getting their way in cabinet.
I think that's absolutely right. And part of that calculation would be to look at a subnational level and see what leverage you have, and to have very clear lines of communication. Because in cabinet itself, you might get outmaneuvered just by the sheer numbers that the ANC have inserted in there, doubling the number of deputy ministers effectively, so that they cancel out the numerical advantage of deputy ministers belonging to other parties. In national cabinet, it's going to be a tough deal to get leverage. The real challenge would be to look at KZN, to look at Gauteng, God forbid, to consider the Western Cape as something that could be a carrot to offer. Now, this is possibly sacrilege, and I'm not sure whether I'm right myself, and it might be a bit of a nuclear option. But inviting the IFP, Freedom Front Plus, any of the sort of, even perhaps Rising Zanzi, I'm not sure, but consider where you have political capital to give in exchange for a united spending, policy of that capital in cabinet. Consider everything at all levels of government, municipal, provincial, so that at a national level, you maximize your leverage, because the ANC is bloody good at this. They are very, very good at yes, destroying parties with momentum. I mean, just look at COPE, look at the UDM, these parties, I think you're absolutely right. Figure it out.
Look at the current cabinet. I mean, the ANC has set the terms of the next 5 years, I think, initially very much in their favor. they very much within government will still have the ability to kind of bulldoze things through right now. So it's going to take some clever politicking in order to avoid that. And also being willing to know when to attack and when to withdraw. Simply getting along to go along is not going to work out for the opposition if they're just going to stop being opposition parties. If the DA is no longer going to ask difficult questions, that's going to be a very big problem for them politically and also in their ability to get things done in government.
And I think two points are important here to note. Number one is Pieter Mulder, who was in Zuma's first term deputy minister for agriculture, said that in cabinet meetings, he and through his work and participation as a deputy minister, he really did prevent stupid and dangerous policies going through. It's not good enough for us to be told of that after the fact. These parties will need very good strategies that won't disrupt the unity of the GNU, but still keep channels of communication open to at least their own voters to indicate when successes that usually would be behind closed doors are worth getting out there. Then the second...
They need to show the value that they're getting from this arrangement.
Exactly, because otherwise it would be coming back to that insularity point that the voters, we voted you into cabinet and then you went into cabinet and you disappeared as the people we voted for. That'll be absolutely toxic because people expect that of the ANC. It's sort of into the formula of their, you know, political calculus. But for the other parties, it's really a sensitive point. The second point that these parties must seriously consider, and I think especially the DA because of its size in Parliament, is how it will manage its backbenchers. Because now you have 12 DA MPs of what, a total of 87 or something. So the remaining MPs, what's it, 65 MPs? Roughly around there. These people will need purposes and jobs, and Parliament will... otherwise, they will rebel for the sake of political activity and survival and earning political capital. If there isn't going to be caucus leadership of a very strong nature, but a very balanced nature that allows for backbenchers to do the parliamentary oversight work and keeping even their own ministers on their toes, if there isn't a plan to ensure that sort of dynamic party discipline that allows some unity, but also these MPs who are not on the front bench to earn political capital, show they are actually worth the seats they're in, then it's going to be very difficult for the party to manage anything resembling coherence. And one of the things that might be worrying for Steenhuisen at this time is he has some of his closest allies in his own caucus now with him in cabinet. And that minimizes their ability to operate as his cheerleaders in the caucus itself. If you have your chief whip removed and gotten into a ministerial position, it's highly impractical to have them remain chief whip. But then you have to ask yourself, who will be a leadership loyal chief whip? And the question of Steenhuisen's party management skills is something that will be tested now like never before.
No, indeed. It's very important that the DA and the IFP do not let their MPs simply, or do not expect their MPs to simply be voting cattle. If that sort of attitude is adopted, there's going to be very big problems down the line, both within the parties themselves and also with their voters who are expecting more. Okay, let's move on to, well, we've talked about, you know, all the complexities and dangers within the government of national unity. Let's talk a little bit about the outside, or what they call themselves now, the official opposition, and I guess they are. That is, the MK party has decided to once again replace Secretary General. Former President Jacob Zuma's MK party has appointed its fourth Secretary General in less than 6 months. The most recent one says that he resigned. But as per usual for MK, there are very different stories, with Zuma saying that, no, he fired this guy. Apparently, Zuma is essentially the king of MK because he doesn't seem to have to follow too many protocols when it comes to hiring or firing people. He issues letters to people saying, and I'm quoting from one of them in the news story here, "Owing to the urgent need of our limited and available human capital efficiently, I've decided to relinquish you from the Treasury General functions with immediate effect." So, MK not looking so hot right now. Yes, they did well in the election, but they're out of power pretty much everywhere. They've only won one by-election in the whole country, and there's just so much churn inside the party.
Yes, I must say that churn within the party is one of the things that over the last, especially 3 years, I think, no, perhaps longer, 5 years, has been a red flag for the EFF. In terms of representing less than 15% of MPs, but at the same time being responsible for, I think, up to a third of MP resignations and vacancies. That makes being a political party quite difficult for a few reasons. Number one, if you're going to be seriously engaged in the political battle in parliamentary terms, you need people to master briefs, because that's how you hold accountable or earn political capital in the direct confrontations within parliament. Number two, you need people to grow into leadership positions within your caucus so that you can rely on deputies and lieutenants to ensure that the party knows which direction it is marching, because it won't always be easy just to have top-down management. Number three, you need to ensure that your allies in what we might now call the progressive caucus know who they're dealing with to accomplish things. And lastly, almost critically, is logistically the arms, the legs, the eyes, and the ears of any political party fighting an election campaign are your elected representatives and the logistical capacity they represent. If you're going to fire hundreds of councillors because they didn't get the right number of people to your 10-year birthday bash, you're going to lose the connections and the networks they've built up to distribute your message and get people registered, signed up, gotten to the voting station. And the MK seems to have taken that and said, you know, hold my beer, because they are taking that into total overdrive. And the late start of MK in December last year might have been the only saving grace they've had to survive unto the up in time, with enough momentum, coherence, and, you know, something in it to get into the election and do well. If they had given 2, 3, 4, 6 extra months, I think we would have been in real trouble. And that's the challenge for MK now, is they are just a feudal, pseudo-tribal entity based around an aging man who contributes the bulk of the party's political support to its initiative and momentum. So, you know, they're worse than the Tories. At least the Tories had prime ministers for, I think, you know, 49 days and stuff.
Yeah, the MK is interesting in that they definitely have some cunning and very intelligent individuals within their ranks. And I think of people like Zuma and people like Hlophe, but they also seem to have no kind of managerial kind of cohesion or skill or anything like that. It just seems like a chaotic mess from start to finish. And you can see that, for example, in how they failed to negotiate with the IFP to try and take control of KZN. Apparently, no one who ever represented MK, or at least was confirmed to be a representative of MK's leadership, was ever able to get in contact with the IFP, despite numerous attempts. Which suggests that the party really is sort of like a swirling tornado of chaos. and if it doesn't sort that out, it's going to fall apart.
And that's the whole thing about why you can't have churn. Because at the end of the day, this really comes down to very human relationships. It comes down to having someone make a call, knowing the person on the other side of the line will answer it. People will be surprised the extent to which such very human interactions determine massive political decisions, the election of mayors, the determining of a vote on this or that legislation. I remember about what must be 15 years ago now, the DA for a short while had the mayoralty of Potchefstroom with Annette Kombrink, and she was nominated when she replied to an SMS saying, I accept my nomination, because it was just so rapidly changing. And if you have no institutional stability within your party, you don't have the people who say, oh, I've got so-and-so's number, we can make this and this deal. And you don't have the people around you understanding, oh, it's that person with this level of insight and use in MK phoning me, the phone won't get picked up. So when you boil it down, if you can't get the logistics right, if the party doesn't know who it is and the people around the party doesn't know who speaks for it, politics just becomes a very, 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 very difficult thing to do for longer than a few months.
I'm also going to be curious to see how Chlope and Zuma's daughter play out in how their dynamic develops in parliament. Both of them are going to be in parliament with Chlope as the chief whip, but yeah, I think that's going to be, let's just say there's a lot of personalities in that party, and there's only space for one or two big wigs. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the time we have to discuss today. We hope you found this interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.